In season two of The Sneak, a podcast from For the Win and USA Today, we will tell the story of surfing champion Jack Roland Murphy, who in 1964 pulled a heist that made him the most famous jewel thief in the country. But that was just the beginning of his story, one that quickly spun out of control and then turned deadly. The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is available now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Or experience the entire series right now, ad-free, exclusively on Wondery Plus. Download the Wondery app and hear all of Season 2 today.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman. The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Now, Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Counter. This is Chris Corman, editor with For the Win. Usually I'm joined by Stephen Ruiz. He's out this week on the non-COVID reserve list. So I am going to bring in Charles Curtis, our excellent, I don't know, jack of all trades. Does a little bit of everything for us. Fantasy football, blogs about the NFL. He's going to stop by to answer some big pressing questions. I think I got five or six that I want him to discuss. We will dig a little bit into what we learned from week eight. Obviously not going to do it to the same extent we do when Steven's here. He's watching all the film, breaking everything down very closely. We won't get to that level of detail, but we'll talk a little bit about what we learned from the slate of games. Obviously the big game was the Steelers-Ravens. Steelers managed to stay undefeated, beating the Ravens 28-4. The Ravens were in it till the end. They did have a shot at the end zone. Lamar Jackson's pass could not get through a tight window, but two pretty even teams, and so we're going to discuss what we think the gap is between those two and the Kansas City Chiefs, who clobbered the Jets and we think remain the class of the AFC. Also dig in a little bit on the NFC. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers play the New York Giants tonight on Monday Night Football. Sure seems like Tampa is the class of the NFC right now. The Seattle Seahawks did beat the 49ers. Russell Wilson continues to be on pace to break the TD pass record. I think the Seahawks are potentially there. The Saints won another close game beating the Bears and have been decimated at wide receiver, haven't had Michael Thomas. Emmanuel Sanders has been out. So I think there's a ceiling for that team to get better too. Green Bay Packers lost to the Vikings. So that's a little troublesome there. And we'll dig in with that with Charles and discuss what's going on there. Around the NFL, the trade deadline's tomorrow. We'll ask Charles about that. Trade deadline Tuesday. Probably not going to be a ton of deals, as there generally are not when it comes to the NFL trade deadline. Whether or not the aforementioned Packers go out and grab a wide receiver, it could be. There have been some deals today that we'll go over. Also some tough COVID-19 news to get through today. A couple of players have tested positive. Marlon Humphrey tested positive. The Packers have a positive test. So this just continues to sort of ripple through the league. I don't know how much impact these will have. Marlon Humphrey, the terrific defensive back for the Ravens, tweeted, "I got the Rona. Hopefully I'll be back healthy soon." Hopefully, again, we've seen it where there's been an isolated case on a team and it has not impacted that team's schedule. They've been able to come back and play games as originally scheduled, but other times, as with the Titans and the Patriots, it spread and then there were games that had to be moved and adjusted. So we'll continue just to monitor this as we go. And I mean, I think this is just going to be our new normal. You guys are probably looking at the numbers and they continue rising all over the country and With the way the NFL is set up, you know, there's no bubble. These players are out in the world, and if it's going to continue to be out there, and as I always say, NFL teams are the whole project of putting out an NFL team takes so many people. There are so many people at an NFL facility doing all of the work that comes along with, you know, you're talking about, I don't know, 90 people who end up being part of the team between the roster and the scout team and all the coaches and the ancillary people working with them, the trainers, the video people. It's really just a huge operation. So it makes it difficult to to stem the spread of a virus. So we'll continue to monitor that as we go on. You know, we're nearing the midway of the season. I think probably anyone who was contemplating this before the season, which certainly we did on this podcast, is you had said that, you know, only a handful of games had to be moved, and that it was, you know, minor interruptions. And one of the things that COVID did was cause there to be a Monday night game at 5 o'clock, which everyone's sort of seemed to enjoy. I think if you said that's how this had turned out, most people would be impressed with that. So, you know, but it's certainly up in the air as we go forward. All right. I'm going to bring in Charles up in New York City, and we will dig into these five questions and discuss where we see things in the league right now.
The Counter.
All right. Let's bring Charles Curtis onto the show. Head up to New York City. What's the mood up there, Charles? A little bit of a weird week, huh?
Yeah, we just got over a week of really bad weather, where it's like foggy and rainy and nasty, and now like the sun is shining on this Monday. So I don't know what that means, but yeah, I would say it's been quite a week. There we had early voting, so like lots of people lining up, at least in my neighborhood for a while, and now we're heading toward election day on Tuesday. So I'd say 10.
Yeah, it's gonna be. Do you think anyone's gonna be paying attention to NFL? I keep going back and forth between like, people are going to be so engrossed with this election going on that there's no way they can pay attention to sports. But then literally 10 seconds later, I'm like, well, okay, people need a release. They need something else to think about. We got to produce the sports content. People need that. And I don't know what I believe. I'm totally confused right now.
I think people still read up on this stuff. I know that, I'll be honest, I will be glued to my television set and my multiple screens. But I think in today's multiple screen society, yeah, I think people are going to be reading up on NFL news in between the election results. I think that, you know, the election results come in very slowly. It always feels like, you know, this hour and that hour, and then by like 11 o'clock, who knows? But in between then, you can be checking your fantasy team because waivers are coming up on Tuesday night, and there's plenty of stuff going on in the league. I mean, today, as we're taping this, Ben DiNucci is being clicked on. So I think that it'll be just fine.
Ben DiNucci. Sitting talking about Ben DiNucci, who was JMU's quarterback. And I'm trying to think of like a political comparison for Ben DiNucci. Like, who was the Ben DiNucci of the Democratic field? And honestly, all that, the primaries and all that happened so long ago, I can't even remember. Like,
I can't think of
Steyer. I don't even know.
Yeah. Who was pulling like under 1%? That would be the Ben DiNucci. Yeah. I immediately thought of Andrew Yang, but Andrew Yang was getting some real, like,
yeah, Yang, he was.
Yeah, the Yang Gang is like, who's a quarterback comparison there? Who's like, oh, like Kyler Murray, like young, buzzy, exciting, maybe not the league MVP, but yeah, that's as far as I can go.
All right, we must stop with these tortured comparisons. I brought you on to answer five pressing questions. I ended up with six questions, but one is not all that pressing. It's just sort of fun. So I'm going to jump right into these questions. And first of all, tomorrow is the trade deadline. You know, the NFL trade deadline, even when it does not occur on the date of a historic presidential election, is generally anticlimactic. Not a whole lot of significant movement. But are you expecting anything huge to go down. There have been a couple deals in the last 24 hours. The Titans traded for Chargers cornerback Desmond King. It's actually a pretty decent move.
Yeah.
The Titans lost to Cincinnati and Joe Burrow and immediately said, well, we probably need some better corners. The 49ers dished off Quan Alexander to the Saints for Kiko Alonso. So sort of a switch of linebacking talent there. And I think the Steelers traded for a linebacker last night, Avery Williamson from the Jets after beating the Ravens. So there are moves happening, but do you expect anything big between now and tomorrow?
I don't think so. I think mainly what I'm thinking, and again, I'm going off of sort of what I'm reading, speculation, whatnot. I have no sources, unfortunately. I wish I did.
sources.
I always, yeah. Anyone who's in our Slack channel will see me all caps go sauces whenever somebody thinks, well, I've heard, you know. I want there to be better deals, but like, for example, I wrote a thing last week about 13 big name players who could be on the move. And there's just been a bunch of names thrown about, like Julio Jones and the Jets, like clearing house with Quinnen Williams, Sam Darnold, you know, like, but I think those right. are pipe dreams. I think there's just a lot of, it would make sense on paper for the Falcons to completely tank and get rid of Julio Jones. But in reality, in the NFL, you have a dead cap space and all that. If you traded a Julio Jones or a Matt Ryan right now, you would be stuck in the cap. And that's not how you rebuild correctly in the NFL. So I don't think right. there's going to be a huge deal. The team that I'm most curious about is the team that I think everybody's most curious about is the Patriots, right? They're 2-5. They're terrible. Cam Newton looks like a shell of his former self. Do they clean house and try to go for a top pick to restart with a new quarterback? Which is funny because that was like every NFL fan's big conspiracy theory. Like, oh, the Patriots are going to tank on purpose to get Trevor Lawrence. Well, obviously they're not going to do that. But it would be really interesting to me to see if Belichick finally, after decades of brilliance, just finally says, like, you know what? This is not the team. We're not going to contend. Let's set up for one last run for me with a restarted roster and a relatively speaking, and a quarterback. What do you think that's feasible, or do you think that's like, again, pie in the sky?
Yeah, I think the issue is that he knows that it's unlikely. Well, I guess they could get to the, we're going to talk about this later, but really the race right now is for Justin Fields, right? Not,
yes.
It sure seems like the Jets are locking up Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Belichick, as Steven has pointed out, the Patriots are already in good position. They have a ton of cap space going into next season. As per usual, they have draft capital. You know, Belichick is very careful about keeping and accumulating draft picks through the compensatory formula. So they are already in good position for some sort of turnaround. Now, the quarterback part is going to be a question, but we saw, you know, and the Cam Newton thing has been hard to evaluate, right? It's I think people are jumping up and say, oh, it's look, you can't go bargain hunting and expect to get real value. But Cam Newton's been pretty good. I think he was the second highest graded passer by PFF yesterday. It was a bad season to try to do that because of COVID-19. There was no traditional practice training camp that a quarterback like him would acclimate to a new system. And quite frankly, the Patriots have not figured out how to use him. Steven and I spent most of our summer sort of gushing about the idea of Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, to whatever extent he's involved in offensive play design and scheming up that offense, that they would just have a blast figuring out how to use him. And it has not come together. And quite frankly, it's probably because they have horrible wide receivers. I mean, they do not have any wide receiving talent. And it really shows. So I think that they're already there, right? Like they are, Bill Belichick is already looking ahead to the offseason and saying, I'm going to rebuild this thing pretty much piece by piece. So I think they're already there. I'm not sure how manipulative he's going to be about trying to get down, you know, get a lower pick in the draft. So I would, and it just seems totally against his nature to
yeah, that's my general feeling as well. Right. Like Bill Belichick doesn't do, and NFL teams generally don't do the full on terrible. I mean, so the Browns did it, but in season, I mean, with the trade deadline,
right?
Generally,
right,
not
right.
Seeing,
at this point,
right? You're generally not seeing NBA, what NBA teams do, which is like, we're, you know, here, take this,
right.
I don't know, Major League Baseball team just saying like, here, take all of our spare parts, give us some prospects and all that, and we'll rebuild that way. It just doesn't work that way, and Belichick kind of knows that, obviously. I mean, the one interesting thing would be like if he traded Stephon Gilmore, which is another name that was thrown around just a little bit. But the one, turning our attention to like other teams and other players who might be insignificant, as you say, Will Fuller is a name that keeps getting thrown around, who's solid quality receiver when he's healthy. And maybe, you know, he's been linked to the Packers. Maybe the Houston Texans are in that mode where they say, give us a draft pick. And you can have Will Fuller. So that would be kind of interesting.
Right. I think first of all, the Texans have to be in that mode. And I also think the Packers need to be in a buying mode. I mean, for Aaron Rodgers, you know, Rodgers has clearly come into this year a little bit re-energized, but again, does not have the talent around him, especially given Green Bay's deficiencies on defense. The defense is not very good. But considering how the NFC is a little bit of a jumble, I mean, the Packers lost to the Vikings and couldn't stop the run at all. But the Packers are still right there. You know, Tampa Bay, I think we both assume are going to absolutely obliterate the Giants tonight.
Yes.
And Tampa Bay seems like the class of the NFC with probably Seattle right behind. Seattle had an impressive win over the 49ers. Russ Wilson continues to be really good. But, you know, you just think about Green Bay, if they can claw to the top of that, of the NFC North and have one home game and get going in the playoffs. You know, Aaron Rodgers is a player who can carry you for those couple games, but he's got to have people to throw to. So if they can get Will Fuller or another wide receiver, whoever else might be on the block, that feels like the most pressing situation for me, that a team like just clearly, hey, we need to go do this and make this happen because we have a little bit of a window here.
Yeah. The only thing to watch out for is Alan Lazard is coming back soon for the Packers. Right. And that's a receiver who we can tell that Aaron Rodgers really trusts and trusted before he went down with an injury and had surgery. And I think that's really an interesting thing to watch. Like if they were to get a Fuller and then put the three of them on the field together, because we know like Marquez Valdes-Scantling just does not, he's sort of a deep threat for
not
them.
Working.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Robert Tonyan has been catching passes out of the tight end spot, which is kind of curious because Rodgers doesn't usually target his tight ends that much. So yeah. I think it'll be a fun deadline. Of course, there are other things distracting us, but I think the NFL will steal some headlines. I think there'll be at least a few more trades, some of them fairly minor. I don't think there's a big home run one coming, and I know I'm going to eat my words 24 hours from now.
I hope so. That would give us something exciting to grab onto tomorrow.
Exactly.
While we're all waiting for vote results to come in. Let's turn our attention to what we observed week 8. The Ravens and Steelers played, and the Steelers came out 28-24 to remain unbeaten, 7-0, atop of their division. This game, it was close. Like I say, you know, Lamar Jackson had a throw at the end of the game to win it, threw into the end zone, just couldn't sort of slide it into a tight window. There was a little bit of controversy toward the end. A Steelers player was hurt and was sort of riding on the field while the Ravens were trying to spike the ball. Some people thought maybe more time should be added on the clock. There was contact on the throw on the wide receiver when Jackson did throw it. So, you know, it was a close game. It was what you expect, Steelers, Ravens. The Ravens dominated for a lot of the game. They ran the ball at will, despite losing starting tackle Ronnie Stanley for the rest of the season. He fractured his ankle, may have damaged some ligaments too, got rolled up on by Watt. So it was what you expect. Lamar Jackson turned the ball over a bunch, Two interceptions, I think two fumbles. I mean, he was not very good. He actually fumbled three times. He lost two of them. So my question for you is, how far ahead are the Steelers of the Ravens right now? Because this definitely feels like these two teams are the tier right behind the Chiefs in the AFC. These are the two teams that will really push the Chiefs. You know, the Bills, I think, are attempting to get into that tier. But to me, these two are still standing out.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the Bills are having some troubles, even though they won. You know, they're to me, defensively 1 week great, next week meh. And then Josh Allen's sort of fallen earth a little bit there. I think you look at like teams like the Titans and the Colts, they're also in that sort of third tier where it's like,
right.
I could see. But then, of course, the Titans lost yesterday to the Dolphins, which was like, wow, okay, that we definitely would not have seen coming. But it seems like some of these teams by midseason, they start to figure things out. Anyway, yeah, I think the answer to your question is not that far ahead. I don't think the Steelers, I think there are problems that the Steelers have. And of course, my knowledge is limited to what I see and not deep, copious tape study like our like our colleague Stephen Ruiz. But I think that what I saw out of that game yesterday, I watched some of the fourth quarter, most of the fourth quarter, I'd say, is here's the thing. Like, Ben Roethlisberger is not the quarterback he's been. And this has been pointed out by many, many people, including Stephen, that he's not throwing deep anymore. He's getting rid of the ball in like 2 seconds, a drop, whatever it is. And so clearly the offense is built around the running game and that. And so to me, I worry, what if there's one game where a team with a really good defense shuts down that myriad of receivers who are not all like top receivers, but the way that the Steelers mix and match them, you get one game where Chase Claypool is going to start. You get one game where Deontay Johnson's getting a lot of passes. You get Juju Smith-Schuster's woken up. I've come on this podcast to talk fantasy. He's woken up a little bit. He's not, you know, a top receiver right now, but he had 7 catches yesterday. And so to me, like, the difference right there is there's one game where maybe Lamar Jackson puts it together in the playoffs. One game where the running game, like it did yesterday, without Mark Ingram, actually works, with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards kind of splitting that. And I think, by the way, that this is Ingram should be done. I would hope that he gets minimal carries the rest of the way, and that these two who got no good rhythm and sort of complement each other really well, that they can run. To me, the Steelers, if they were to meet the Ravens in the playoffs or just another team and they run into this kind of situation, they're done, you know? And I think the Steelers defense is elite. Don't get me wrong. What they are continuing to do is amazing. They've got still, like they've always had, one of the best pass rushes in the NFL. They've got a terrific secondary. This is a team that's really hard to get points up on. But I do think that at some point, Lamar Jackson has to figure it out, right? Like, to some extent.
I think you've honed in on what the difference is for me is that Ben Roethlisberger is, you know, I think you would say struggling compared to what Ben Roethlisberger was before. Right. Yeah. He's gotten a little bit better as the season gone on, as he's figuring out what he can do with after surgery and where he can throw the ball. I mean, he took a few deeper shots against the Ravens. Again, not great. You know, he's just clearly not that guy he was. And I just think his ceiling for improvement is naturally low. He's older. I mean, I think he's, what, 38 years old. He's coming off that injury, you know, and just the way that the offense is being run. He needs, you know, Deontay Johnson was, he was, again, dealing with injury during the game yesterday, so it was not really a factor. He needs a guy like that to get the ball to and get some yard after catch. So it's just, I don't think that there's much room for that for Roethlisberger and the way the offense is being run to grow. Whereas, as you say, Lamar Jackson, I mean, he's just not been good, right? He's been a shadow of the MVP he was a year ago. But the chances of him getting back to an elite level are so much higher. I mean, he's a guy who has just figured things out time after time. He really, you know, his game has grown and evolved And meanwhile, it's been great. I mean, I think he's 24-5 as an NFL starter. He's 23 years old. I mean, this is a guy who's he's still very young. Defenses are adjusting to him. He's adjusting to them, and that's going to continue to happen. And as we saw, the running game really got going, which it had not been. You know, people don't realize the Ravens had a great record. So I think people who weren't watching the games just assumed, okay, they're doing the same thing they were doing last year. And they weren't. The running game, besides Lamar, was not working. So Lamar had to be the running game. And then that was not opening anything up for the pass, because the Ravens offense is a totally different animal than the rest of the NFL at this point, the way that they're using the run to set things up. So I think that there's a better chance that they will, the Ravens offensively will take huge leaps. And whereas the Steelers are, I think, sort of near their ceiling for what they're going to be offensively. But we are going to find out again on Thanksgiving. These two teams play. That's a great Thanksgiving day
that's
game.
That's a good Thanksgiving game right there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's the night game, which is perfect.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
The key to me, right, is will Lamar Jackson get on the same page in the passing game that he's had? I mean, Marquise Brown there was a deleted tweet where he complained, and I'm like,
right,
they can do it, right? Like, just early in the season, they were clicking a little bit. And I think this is just midseason adjustments. It's not like you got a bad coaching staff that's leaving them out to dry. Like, this is clearly a team that will rebound at some point. I don't think Lamar Jackson is going to be the MVP he was last year. That's gone for now. But he can get back to some of that. That I think he's capable of. And I think that the Steelers, while being undefeated, like, you can see the cracks in the armor for sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, either way, this will be a really fun matchup just to talk about. I mean, like we said, we're going to see we're going to get another game between these two. But then each week, sort of seeing what they do against other teams and comparing them and trying to gauge that. And, you know, this just screams a matchup that you really want to see in the playoffs.
We're really lucky
to see a third version of this game this year. I think they're just, it's a classic rivalry. You know, it's developed into one of the better rivalries in the NFL. But particularly this year, it is two tough defenses that go about it a little bit different. I think the Steelers are a much better pass rush team, whereas the Ravens have a better secondary, a more well-rounded secondary. Obviously, they added Ngakoue to try to get a better pass rush. But, just really elite defenses and offenses that you have some questions about, but are finding ways to get it done. So a really fun one to continue watching. You mentioned we've talked a little bit about the Patriots, but I want to just put the question to you: are the Patriots done? I mean, is this team done for this season after losing to the Bills? I think they're 2-5 now.
Yeah.
So is this particular team done, and is the Belichick dynasty done? The larger question.
Yeah, well, the Belichick dynasty will be done when he leaves the game. Like, that to me is the big question is, like, is his window completely closed? Like, no, because Bill Belichick's brilliant.
He's Bill Belichick.
Right, he's Bill Belichick. Like, and this happens to me every single time we do our picks column, me and Steven, and the Patriots come up, like, they've been underdogs a few times this season, or they've, you know, the spread is so close, and you're like, well, when did this happen? But every time I say it's Belichick, how am I betting against Belichick? How do I do that? And they covered this week, by the way. I think 3.5 was the spread and they covered. So, like, don't bet against Bill Belichick. And that goes for games. That goes for the dynasty. That goes for whatever his mastermind plan is for this season and beyond. So the dynasty, put that on hold for a second. I think that there are a lot of veterans on this team, though. There are a lot of older players who have lost a step. Gilmore, we talked about before, Stephen Gilmore, doesn't quite look like the shutdown corner that he's always been. Julian Edelman is clearly banged up. I think he's injured for a while now. They've got these young receivers. And by the way, the one fun story to follow is how many receivers did they not draft instead of N'Keal Harry and that group? I mean, you're an Eagles fan. Travis Fulgham, like, just draft him. He was third round pick, I think, you know, so on and so forth. I'm not betting on Belichick being out this season. However, I think, this team is not making the playoffs. Think about it a different way, right? They could suddenly figure things out, which I don't necessarily see happening. But you've got a team, you've got the Titans and Colts fighting for the South, and I think that one of those teams probably ends up as a wild card team. I mean, that's two really talented teams. Steelers and Ravens, one of them will be a wild card. And then you've got the obviously the Chiefs, and you have the Bills are probably winning that division. I don't think the Dolphins with Tua are necessarily going to do that. So where do the Patriots fit in? I don't think they're making the playoffs, just plain and simple. Right. And that's fine. I think that they had to take their chance with Cam Newton. They did. It's not working out exactly how they wanted it. Maybe he makes adjustments, but it's clear to me that a 2-5, you know, you're probably not getting there. Maybe they end up at 9-7, but that feels like a long shot to me.
Right. It's been a long time since we had a Patriot-less playoffs, right? Was it 2008, yeah. I think?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And
yeah.
Before that, 2002, after I think they went 9-7 after winning the Super Bowl. It's just weird. It's just a weird thing to come to this point in an NFL season and not have to take the Patriots seriously. But as we were talking about, it's Bill Belichick, and I mean both on the field and as a general manager, he's just proven unparalleled at tinkering and figuring things out. That's really been his genius. You know, it's not so much what he does, because he does not just do one thing. He figures out whatever's next and whatever needs to be the adjustment to the adjustments being made. And he puts those in place. He figures out, so he stays ahead. So I sort of can't wait to get to, you know, February after the Super Bowl and start digging in with you guys, Steven and you and Henry, and like, what is Belichick going to do? Like what's out there? How can he do this? Where do they finish? What are they going to pick? Cause it's going to be one of the most fascinating sort of rebuilds that we've been able to take a guess about. So I'm sort of perversely looking forward to figuring out how that's going to go.
It's become perversely fascinating. It's like, right. What do the Patriots do now, and how are they going to wow us? And I think that's absolutely right to expect. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
You know, the Schadenfreude, I think, is a little bit gone, right? I would hope.
Right.
Because I think some of the Schadenfreude came with like Brady, you know? I don't know.
Right.
You seem to agree.
I mean, we're going to talk about Brady next.
All right.
Hey, that's my next question is Tom Brady going to win another Super Bowl? Because, you know, that's sort of how we framed this offseason, right? Brady and Belichick. It was sort of a little bit of a cold war going into free agency, right? It was like Tom Brady's got his house up in the market. Bill Belichick won't say whether he wants to commit, but you know, and everyone's saying, well, it's Tom Brady, and he's going to figure it out. He's going to stay in Boston forever. And then it just sort of happened, right? Like, just the Patriots announced they weren't going to re-sign him. Brady sort of wrote a polite goodbye note, and then all of a sudden, Tom Brady was a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. And man, it has gone probably exactly. We just discussed it. It did not go to plan for Bill Belichick, but for Brady, this is exactly what I think he envisioned: having an offense with a lot of weapons and a little bit of a more downfield attack. I don't know if he correctly evaluated this, but the Buccaneers defense has ascended. I think it was we saw it as a defense last year that was really good and was on the cusp of being better. It's now probably one of the top three defenses in the NFL. And
absolutely.
So he certainly seems like he's in a position, and Antonio Brown is going to be joining the fray. Whether or not that's good or bad, I guess is depends on your perception. But it probably helps with some of the injuries they've had to wide receivers. So what's your thought? I mean, is Brady, are the Bucs a favorite to end up in the Super Bowl and potentially win it? They'd be playing at home.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a battle of the bays. But by the time we get to the NFC Championship game, I think that you can't count on Aaron Rodgers. I think the Packers' defense is really good enough to get them this far. But man, the Bucs defense to me was the big question coming into the season, right? Last year, really good against the run, kind of a sieve against the pass. And the hope was that they would shore that up. Well, they got Antoine Winfield Jr., who has been better than his dad, right? Like, you know, I think his dad has even said that, you know, and the pass rush has been terrific. And it's been sort of really interesting to me to see, okay, like, is Brady really going to throw downfield? Like, this is a different type of offense. You know, Bruce Arians has a very different kind of offense. And I'm super impressed. I really am, because he's settled in nicely. He's used the receivers in a way that is really, it's fun to watch, actually, because Mike Evans has become, when Chris Godwin's not there, has become the star. But like, when they have their full complement of receivers, Mike Evans becomes this red zone threat. It's like there's a button that turns on Brady's head and goes, okay, we're inside the 20. We got to give it to our tallest receiver. And so while that's produced some weird
right.
stat lines, it's like, this is what Brady could do with a receiving core that isn't just like Julian Edelman running really good routes and nothing else, right? Because that's what we saw for a couple seasons. And yeah, he won a few things there. Rob Gronkowski's rounding into shape, which is something I didn't expect after seeing what had happened in the first few games for him. And yes, I think the Buccaneers should be a favorite. I think the NFC is stronger than we think. I think that the Saints, if they get Michael Thomas back, will right their ship again. But that is a team right. defensively that I'm sort of starting to be concerned about, given that they almost lost to the Bears. And obviously, I think the most fun NFC storylines are to take a little turn here is that whoever wins the NFC East, and it's probably going to be the Eagles, is going to win a playoff game. I'm making that, like, it happened with the Seahawks however many years ago.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's happening. I don't know against whom.
I kind of think that's a fair assessment. You know, I think it was talked about a little bit on the broadcast last night that once the team has a home playoff game, and granted, it's probably not going to be a big raucous crowd because of COVID-19 numbers continuing to spike across the country. But it's one football game and anything can happen. And as much as the Eagles are horrifically flawed on so many different levels, Carson Wentz can be one of the better quarterbacks in the league when he puts it all together, and the defense has been good at times. So I think that could certainly happen. I think your Brady point is really good. The fact that he, you know, Mike Evans, I don't know how happy Evans is with sort of his role being, you know, turning a little bit, but Brady, I think, has such a good sense of what situation guys are best in and when to throw it to them, where to throw it to them. And he's really spreading around Scotty Miller, who I guess actually, if you told me before the season that a little wide receiver, a guy like Scotty Miller would be a Tom Brady favorite, I would have said, yeah.
It's obvious. Right. It's too totally obvious. True. I wrote a post about him. Sorry to interrupt, but it's just amusing to me because I wrote a post about him when I think it was Godwin went down or Evans was not going to start 1 week. And it was like, hey, fantasy people. And I honestly spent 10 minutes being like, should I really write this post? And how do I say it without being like stereotypical, right? Like little unknown wide receiver who happens to be white is, you know, going to be a favorite of Tom Brady's. And so, yeah, I avoided it. But right. I think, yeah, if you told me Scotty Miller is going to be, you know, great, like, you know, and Brady gushed about him like in the preseason, it was amazing. But yes, you were saying that it's amazing.
Yeah, so Miller's got 365 yards receiving, which is the most for the Bucs right now. But he's got 22 receptions. Mike Evans has 25. Rob Gronkowski has 22. Chris Godwin has 25. And as we mentioned, AB is getting added to that mix.
That's nuts.
I mean, that's right. Like, that is, of course, Tom Brady would want that compared to N'Keal Harry, Demir Byrd, this shadow of Julian, you know, like his, like, and I don't know how do you deal with this if you're a defense? There is no easy way to defend an offense with that many options. And when you have a guy in Brady who, I mean, I think that that's probably what he excels at most, right? Is diagnosing where an opening's going to be and getting the ball there quickly, right? That is
yep.
the sort of core of what has made him great. Is he the best? Does he have the best arm talent ever? No, I don't even know if he's top 10. He's certainly not athletic, but he just sort of understands the game and understands the chess pieces that he has, and he just has such a better supporting cast in Tampa Bay, and it has really worked out. So I think how long were you waiting to make the Battle of the Bays joke, by the way?
20 minutes.
I feel like you had that one.
How long have we been
on?
You
had that one holstered up. You've been
I had it in my head.
That one.
You nailed it. You absolutely nailed me on that. One other thing to note with Tampa Bay also is that the running game has gotten better. I mean, the last few years it's been Ronald Jones. What is his name? Who's on the Washington football team now? Who is his Barber, Peyton Barber? And then they added Leonard Fournette. And to me, it just reeks of like, look, we've got Tom Brady. Tom Brady, we know his limitations. We know that he's not a mobile quarterback by any stretch. And now he's also a 42-year-old, not mobile quarterback.
43, I think.
43, now. Right. Ageless. Yeah. We know what he can and can't do. And so I think I would need a guru that we have on staff to break down why Brady succeeds in this particular offense. But to me, the eye test is he's got, lower, middle, deep weapons. He's got somebody familiar there who he knows how to throw to in the middle of the field, who's now rounding into shape. He's got a good offensive line. He's got the defense. Yeah, absolutely. I think there are flaws on a lot of other NFC teams. Like the Cardinals aren't there yet. I think the Seahawks defense is alarming. I think that the Saints, like I said, a little worried about the defense. I think that once they get Godwin healthy, once they have Antonio Brown in the rhythm with all that, this is a scary team. And I mostly because I think also the defense, and you're going to see that against the Giants on Monday night, because the Jason Pierre-Paul revenge game is going to happen. And I love their linebacking core, because they do a lot of everything, just a lot of everything, Shaq Barrett.
Right.
Levante David is so fun to watch. Devin White's having a good season. Like, this is a scary team.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Giants.
That's fine.
Speaking of scary, I have a question to ask you. This is the fun question I wanted to pose to you. How angry would you have to get to punch someone in the helmet? Like to just be overwhelmed with rage that you think it's a good idea to take your bare hand and fling it at a metal face mask or plastic helmet? What would have to happen for you to get there?
Blind rage. Let's see. I don't know. I'll tell you, I think that we've seen it so many times. Like, I've seen the move that I think players have used that is, I don't know, should I condone violence here? It's not condoning it, but what I've seen in the NFL is the helmet push, right? You get your hand under the chin area and kind of push the head up, right? Hitting a helmet is the dumbest thing you can do. I think I'd probably have to be in like a blind rage. Like, you insulted, I don't know, my family. I don't know. Something so, really.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So we're obviously talking about you guys probably all saw this clip of Javon Wims, the wide receiver for Chicago, got epically pissed off with CJ Gardner-Johnson, a safety for the Saints. And after a play in which he wasn't even engaged with Gardner Johnson, he was being guarded by a different player, he sort of trotted over. The thing that killed me was the chest tap, right? So he like came up sort of to the side of Gardner Johnson, tapped him on the chest, and when he turned, he threw a punch. And then Gardner Johnson just stood there like, what just happened? And also, that did not hurt because you punched my helmet.
The best thing about that, though,
apparently, and I guess Wims is now saying that he was spit on, that Gardner Johnson ripped out his mouthpiece, but also spit on him, which
Well, let's get to the mouthpiece, because
there's that rage.
Yeah, there's a guy on Twitter who broke this down, who talked about looking at the video exactly how it went down. And it's kind of hilarious to watch. You all should watch the clip, because Wims' mouthpiece gets ripped out of his helmet. It's one of those dangly ones from the helmet, and it gets left on the field. And then Wims waited, this user, I should call him, at Evan Sacks, two A's. Evan, S-A-A-C-K-S. He did a great job breaking down. He said the guy waited 11 full minutes, not like NFL game time minutes, 11 real minutes to get out on the field. Didn't even face Gardner Johnson on the play, but then like ran up to him. And I think the first thing you see isn't necessarily a chest tap. I think it was an attempted revenge rip of the mouth guard. So I think that's what we ended up.
Oh, interesting.
And then like the second thing was smacking him in the helmet, and you got to love Gardner Johnson the second time. Is like, okay, like take the foul. You're going to get ejected. And he like turns his head as the punch is coming and whap, like, go ahead, break your hand. Like I'll survive, which is just like, I would not be able to do that. But yeah, like why aren't there more? This was asked in a group chat that I have of friends. Why don't we see more body blows? And I think the answer is really simple, by the way, is because these guys wear shells, right? They wear padding underneath. Like, you're not going to get a body shot in on a guy. And like, that seems ridiculous. But I think when you're in that NFL game mode, your adrenaline's running super high. So you're not even thinking about the fact that you could break your hand easily hitting a guy in the helmet, or you're trying to like, I think one of the players, I want to say it's Wims. No, I think it was Gardner. He got like fingers in the eye hole, you know, and all that. So,
yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, I don't understand that. But I also have not played an NFL game. When you hear stories about like what happens in a scrum when there's a fumble and like all the awful dirty things that happen. And like the one that I always think about is guys put their finger in the ear hole. And then they pull at the ear,
I think the best thing for all involved is just not to play football. Like you should just never put yourself in position to punch someone in the face, Matt. That's probably the best plan. I don't know. So, I mean, someone could like make fun of Philadelphia in any way, shape or form, and I would punch them in the face mask because that's just how Philadelphians are. I'm contractually obligated to do that, to have that much rage.
Yeah. The water quality though.
Or make fun of Italian water ice. And also if you don't like cheesesteaks, I would do the same thing. There are some young guys who want to continue playing football because they will be very good at it and make bajillions of dollars, like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And as we said earlier, it sure seems like Trevor Lawrence, the race for his services will be wrapped up by the lousy New York Jets. So is the race for, I know you had some pithy sayings for it, the just lose for Justin Fields. Is that more exciting right now?
Because
the Giants could be involved, right?
Yes, that is where I'm very excited. I'm thinking the Giants have a chance at pulling the Arizona Cardinals situation, right? Where they clean house, they get a new general manager, they get a new, Joe Judge has been their coach for exactly a year. I don't know if that's going to, happen, but they get a new general manager. And they say to themselves, well, we got the number two pick now. I'm assuming a lot here. Daniel Jones is not our guy, so let's draft our guy. And so they end up with Justin Fields. So, yeah, I think that the Giants getting Justin Fields would be super exciting. Now, that said, you have a bunch of other teams that have a chance at this. The Jacksonville Jaguars, I think, are probably a team that ends up doing that. I think the Dallas Cowboys, intriguingly enough, could be a team that ends up getting there. That brings the question like, well, what would Jerry Jones do? Would he pay Dak Prescott or let him walk and then take the quarterback? I think he would sign Dak Prescott. And then like the Miami Dolphins, and there's sort of an interesting storyline brewing there that I've seen a little bit on Twitter. That's like Tua Tagovailoa. Why is he starting? Well, they want to evaluate him now. So in case they end up with the Houston Texans being abysmal, right, that they end up with the number two pick and they have to pick a quarterback that will be potentially better than Tua, which is again, like, fascinating. So I don't think it's a guarantee, but like, look at what we're talking about here. Like the Washington football team can end up with this pick.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think Justin Fields would probably be the number one pick. I think he would have been the number one pick last year. I think he's got significantly more upside than Joe Burrow. So, I mean, he's a player that teams should be excited about. I mean, if the Jags, it just feels like they are perpetually downtrodden. I almost don't want him to go there just because I feel like his chances of succeeding are hampered by that franchise. But
yes,
it certainly seems like that at this point is the most likely destination. I feel like the Giants are just going to win a couple games because they're in the NFC East, and
it's unfortunately
a little messy.
Yeah. So. It's going to be a great race. I'm excited. This is like we're talking about Trevor Lawrence, the best quarterback prospect in a decade or at least. And then everyone's talking about like a consolation prize. Like Justin Fields is not a consolation prize.
No,
it's fascinating.
Right. And yeah, in some ways he has. There are certainly smart people who think he's a better prospect than Lawrence. So I need to watch a lot more film and think about that. And, you know, we'll have the extended draft process next year to debate all of it, but he's a really good player. So it'll be interesting. All right. I think that's all we got time for today. Charles, thank you so much for joining me, in Steven's absence. Appreciate you taking the time. How do you want to close this show out? It's a big, interesting week. You got any nuggets of wisdom to drop as we depart here?
Oh yeah. You put me on a spot here. I think, full disclosure, I was warned about this by Chris Corman over here and I promptly forgot about it. Any nuggets of wisdom? I'm going to say that the Jets are going to cover this week. That's my hot.
Ooh. The Jets, and
they're playing scorching. The Patriots. They're going to cover this week. I think the Jets are going to cover this week. I see it. They allowed what, like 15 yards rushing last week. I'm seeing it. And I watch me on Thursday when I have to do the picks column. I'm going to go the right now as of Monday morning. Maybe it's Tuesday in my head. Maybe it's the election in my head, but the Jets are going to cover next week. Darn it. It's happening.
That's Steven does that all the time though. He like proclaims something in the podcast and then he actually sits down to write when you have like time to really think things through and he changes his mind. So you're in good company there. Again, thank you so much for joining us, Charles, and thank you to everybody out there listening. We will be back later this week. Get out and vote. We'll talk to you later. Take care.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win, Steven Ruiz and Chris Corman.